My mother, she said, you're no better than anybody else, but nobody else is better than you. And never forget it.
Former longtime senator representing Michigan, Carl Levin, has died. He was 87. Levin is remembered and respected as a serious lawmaker who revered the Senate's role in government, the nuance of policy and policymaking. He valued bipartisan collegiality and serving his constituents. And Carl Levin suffered no fools.
The context, let me tell you, the context is mighty clear.
Especially those who came before his committees.
June 22 is the date of this email.
As this Goldman Sachs executive discovered after the financial crisis of 2008.
Boy, that Timberwolf was one shitty deal. How much of that shitty deal did you sell to your clients after June 22, 2007?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that, but the price would have reflected levels that they wanted to invest
in. Oh, of course. But they don't know what it says. You didn't tell them you thought it was a shitty deal.
Well, I didn't say that.
No. Who did? Your people, internally. You knew it was a shitty deal, and that's what your email shows.
I think the context, the message that I took from the email from Mr. Montag was that my performance on that deal was...
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today, we'll reflect on a generational talent in public service who represented our state in the Senate longer than any other. First off, we're going to hear from the man himself. I talked with Senator Levin earlier this year after the release of his memoir, Getting to the Heart of the Matter, My 36 Years in the Senate. There's so much interesting material in this book, it's kind of hard to know where to begin. But I think I want to start with a photo that appears in the book of you and most of the Michigan delegation. John Conyers is there, Fred Upton, Senator Stabenow is there. I think then-Governor Granholm appears in the photo as well. And of course, John Dingell. I just wanted to ask what you feel Michigan's leadership brings to the legislative branch that might not otherwise be there.
Well, the delegation from Michigan is always pulled together when it comes to issues for Michigan. We've worked on a bipartisan basis for Michigan's interest, and it was very productive, and I think still is productive when it comes to the issues that Michigan is most interested in. So, and the working together concept, which is so important for any legislative goal, is important for the nation too, and that's really what's been missing recently in Congress is a willingness on the part of some to work across party lines to get things done that the country needs.
Can you think of an example in which something got done that had a real benefit in the lives of folks at home in Michigan that wouldn't have otherwise happened without the relationships that you developed over your time in office?
Well, I had a really wonderful relationship with a number of Republicans, including John McCain, John Warner. One example, for instance, with McCain was we had a hearing looking into tax abuses by the most profitable companies in the country that were not paying taxes at all, or paying reduced taxes because they created these artificial entities overseas in tax havens so that they could avoid paying American taxes. Well, you got the wealthiest companies, the Googles, the Apples, and so forth, that are avoiding taxes. That puts a burden on the rest of us to keep the government's revenues going, and that includes, obviously, people in Michigan. It's not just a Michigan benefit. It's a national benefit, but it surely includes taxpayers in Michigan who have a tax burden, and we should not be carrying that burden for the wealthiest among us, including those corporations. And so McCain took a very gutsy position. He went after the president of Apple at a hearing with me, in our oversight hearing at Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations.
It's completely outrageous that Apple has not only dodged full payment of U.S. taxes, but it's managed to evade paying taxes around the world.
Apple's a great company, but no company should be able to determine how much it's going to pay in taxes, how many profits they're going to keep offshore, how they're going to bring them back home, using all kinds of gimmicks to avoid paying the taxes that should be paid to this country.
And he took them on with me. And, you know, if for a Republican to take on a big corporation on a tax issue, because they're not paying taxes at all or enough, their share, it's a courageous thing for McCain to do, and he was a courageous guy generally. So I had a number of very good relationships with various Republicans that work with me on a permanent subcommittee and were with me when I was chair of the Armed Services Committee.
Those relationships, do you think that's what makes the Senate special?
It does. There's a lot of things which contribute to it. We're a smaller body. We get to know people a little bit better than with a much larger body like the House. It also is a special place because you have an opportunity, a guarantee in the Senate, unlike any other legislative body, probably in the world, including the House of Representatives, you're guaranteed an opportunity to offer amendments to legislation which is in front of you. And that opportunity means that everybody can offer a position that they take and have it debated and have it resolved. And that's a really extraordinary benefit of the United States Senate. It's why it should be the world's greatest deliberative body. It's fallen a lot short of that recently for a number of reasons, but that's why it has been called and at times has been a great deliberative body.
You were raised in Detroit, of course, the grandson of immigrants. And you say in the book that your family always talked politics at the dinner table, that lively discussion was just something your family did. You don't make any mention about how your mom felt about you and then eventually your brother Sandy ascending to these national offices. Do you think that that's something that she and perhaps your late father, like what they would have thought of that?
Well, my mother and dad were both deeply committed to public service. They were strong Democrats and believed in FDR. And my dad was very active in public life in a number of ways. My mother was she sort of accepted what came. She was more philosophical about life. She taught us about equality. She said, you're no better than anybody else, but nobody else is better than you. And never forget it. She really, truly believed in that kind of decency towards people. But she also was philosophical about a number of other things. What came, you accept is part of life. You accept setbacks as part of life. She was raised in a small town in Birmingham, Michigan. And my brother Sandy, our sister Hannah, who's now gone, but my brother and I were taught an awful lot by some loving parents about family and how important family is. And it's first and foremost in our lives. Now we got a nephew. I have a nephew, Andy Levin, who's in public life.
Right.
And he's carried on that tradition. But I also watch our kids. We have three daughters. We have six grandchildren, and I watch how our kids are so close to each other as they're now in their 50s. I see how their six children, two each, how close they are, loving cousins, keep in touch with each other, and how caring they are for their grandparents, how loving they are. So it's family is so important, and I grieve for anybody that has a broken family. And where there's quarrels or dissent and divisiveness inside a family, it, you know, it hurts me, who's been the beneficiary of such a strong family, even to witness where that doesn't exist in other families. Oh, absolutely. It's the greatest place that I can imagine, other than a presidency, to be involved in public service, which is so, so important that people respect and understand and and I think honor by the way in which they practice their public service and get engaged looking for the good of the cause or the state or the district, and not after just always trying to do what's popular, which is a way of assuring one's own reelection. And that shouldn't be the mode of it. It shouldn't be doing the popular thing. It should be a willingness to, after thinking about it, listening to people, not being arrogant, doing what you think is best for your district, if you're elected official, or your state. There's a hundred different ways that people can serve their communities. And I think this country is so at the foundation, in a way, is helping each other, respecting each other, serving each other, sacrificing for each other, being part of a community. We talked about family before, which is number one in my book, but community is number two. Being part of a community that you are serving and helping, there's just so many ways of really being a public servant. And this country's been famous for that kind of commitment, and I hope always will be.
Senator Levin, thank you so much.
Good being with you, April.
Just a quick break, and then we'll be back with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, who counts Carl Levin as a longtime colleague and friend, as the Levins and Dingells share a rich history. We'll be right back.
Support for the Stateside Podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside Podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Today we wanted to talk to Congresswoman Debbie Dingell for some reflections on Carl Levin. He shared a long friendship with her husband, former Congressman John Dingell.
But Carl Levin was a smart, unflappable, ferocious fighter who came prepared and knew every detail. And if you were appearing as a witness before his committee, you better do your homework, because he knew how to hold people accountable. And he believed in holding people accountable for the people that elected him. He felt his duty and responsibility to be a good public servant every single day.
What was he like behind the scenes with you?
He was, you know, he was one of John Dingell's best friends. The two of them, the Dingells and the Levin family, go back for, I hate to say this, for almost 100 years. It's not quite 100 years, but.
Wow.
Carl's uncle, Ted Levin, and Sandy's uncle was nominated for the federal judge by John's father. Carl and Sandy campaigned when they were kids, 8 and 10 years old. They have pictures of campaigning for John's dad. But they were friends. They believed in public service. They believed in doing what was right. And they weren't afraid to stand up for what was right. But they were also the most down-to-earth, humble, never forgot where they came from, couldn't wait to get home and be home when they were in Washington, and never forgot who sent them to Washington or why they were there.
Were there ways that you saw he and John supporting each other with the complexities of a very demanding job, or ways that they helped each other?
Well, they were great friends, but they'd see a problem, and they worked on many problems together. They were champions of the auto industry. They cleaned up the Great Lakes. They care deeply about the environment, champion national parks and state parks. They brought, you know, Carl's very much responsible for what happened in Warren with TACOM, the Defense and Selfridge Air Force Base. But they also weren't afraid to compromise. They had strong relationships on both sides of the aisle, and they'd see a problem, and they didn't feel like they were the only ones that had the answer. They'd talk about it. They'd talk about, okay, what perspectives? What are the different perspectives? What should we be doing? And they would meet with a lot of people, and they tried to find the answers. They would look at something not to get attention, not to get in the newspaper or the television, but they say, this is a problem that needs to be solved. And how do we solve it? How do we bring the people together that we need to do to address the root problem?
I'm looking at Michigan's representation right now, and I see Fred Upton and a bunch of people elected after 2010. Now, you yourself are sort of a bridge figure. You were elected in 2015, but you were in the room for so much of John's career and benefited, you know, when you did come to office from all that. When you think about the representation that Michigan has right now, how do we get more Carl Levin?
Well, we have to work at it. I mean, I think each of us has responsibility, and it's not only those that are elected to serve the people, but we need to look at what's happening in this country today, the fear and the hatred that's dividing us. And, you know, my favorite saying, John used to say it, the nuns taught it to me, God gave us two ears and one mouth for a reason, to listen more and talk less. And there were giants that believed in public service. We demonize public service now. Public service is making our communities better. But we also need to look at what's happening every place, in our workplaces, in our schools, on Facebook, in our communities, at the division. And I think that people are attacking the fundamental pillars of our democracy. John Dingell and Carl Levin would have pushed back and weren't afraid to tell people, look at what is happening. And I challenge all of us to learn the lessons from great men like these. And let's try to respect each other more. We can disagree agreeably, be civil, look at life from different perspectives. That's one of the lessons Carl Levin taught us.
What can I just ask one more thing? What do you make of the fact that Senator Levin was working, writing, and teaching at Wayne State up until the very end of his life?
That he had a lot to give, and he never stopped working or fighting. John was the same way. John was dictating to me the day that he died. These were men that loved their country, their state. They were proud. John still called himself a Detroiter, too. Carl Levin never forgot the city he was born in, where his family roots were. He couldn't wait to get home to Detroit every weekend. And when he retired, he came home to Detroit. I don't want people to ever forget that Carl Levin was one of the strongest Tiger fans that ever cheered for them. And he'd look at abandoned buildings in Detroit and say, what are we going to do to bring them back? And, you know, these were great men, and we need to learn from them, and we need to build on the foundations that they laid for us, strong foundations that have the next generations building upon them.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside shows to listen to at michiganradio.org. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis, and Laura produced today's episode. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.